to them, this room from the other side so many times, you know, but it's nice to be here in person. So as Kevin said, the title is, I guess I'll write it again, Symplectic Duality. And a presentation for the cohomology of Nakajima proof varieties. Well, actually, equivariant cohomology. right. And the idea is that actually the presentation I'm going to give is sort of really explicit. And it's actually, there should be another word in here, conjectural. I can't prove that this is a presentation, but we can prove that it is on the level of points. So the algebra I'll write down some at some point is some sort of possibly nilpotent version. It's some possible version of the equivariant cohomology, but maybe with some nilpotents thrown in. And great. So I wanted to say a couple things. So this is work that has been joint with subsets of a few people. So one is Joel Kamnitzer, who's my advisor. another is Peter Tingley, Ben Webster, and Oded Jacoby. I was going to say, if you were here a few weeks ago when Joel gave a talk, there'll be a substantial overlap there. So sorry if that is seeing stuff again. Hopefully I'll say some different things. So the symplectic duality sort of buzzword there, it's really just inspiring where this presentation that I'm going to write down is coming from. And so I thought to sort of motivate that, I would discuss, well, try to use some physics terms and hopefully motivate what I want to say. So I thought I would start with just a sort of, what I understand to be a general framework for 3D n equals 4 supersymmetric gauge theory. And sort of, so here's some motivation. So we want the, as I said, 3D supersymmetric gauge theory. So I'm going to have a complex gauge group G, script DG, and some representation of it. Of G. And really, I guess I want to consider something where you actually let G act on the cotangent space of N. And so associated to the action on the cotangent space, you're going to have a moment map from T star N to sort of Lie G star. OK.
The action is just whenever you have G acting on the manifold, it acts on the cotangent.
So I think
it's
so, yes.
Natural reduced one, right. Is that the one you mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think so. this isn't exactly my area of expertise, but slowly becoming. So there's sort of this, what I understand to be a sort of duality between the Coulomb branch of the space of vacua for this theory and the Higgs branch. So just roughly, I'll try and draw some two-sided picture. On the one side, there's some space MC. And on the right-hand side, which I don't won't describe, it seems to be quite complicated mathematically. There's some recent work of, a bunch of recent work, but especially mathematically of Braverman, Finkelberg, and Nakajima on sort of describing what this is. But let's not do that. So on this side, though, there's sort of a concrete description. It's a, this guy I think of as being sort of this reduction, I mean, a sort of quotient, just this affine, possibly singular thing at the zero level of the moment map. And we can sort of correspond a bunch of data between these two sides. So on the Coulomb side, we might want to fix a choice of a C star action on this space, which actually is going to come from something like pi 1 of G Pontryagin dual, which will act on here. So it's actually some sort of Hamiltonian C star action. And on the other side, you can think that that data, this data of theta, is the same as sort of a GIT parameter that we could put in instead. So I'll just say GIT. I'll call M tilde of H, which is, again, the zero level of the moment map, but now you throw in this theta. Okay, so that's two pieces of data. And there's a third thing, which is on this left-hand side, I want to deform. This will be a Poisson variety. I want to deform the ring of functions on it. And so there's some choice of doing that, but let me just say, so on this side, we'd have a choice of deformation, quantization. say A, H, it's an A, of functions on this M Coulomb. And on the right-hand side, we should somehow, that should be the same as roughly a choice of C star action on this guy here. Maybe to make this all precise, I would need to add some more adjectives in. But so there, just to say, there's some, the way I see it anyway, is there's some, this duality between these two things, and sort of data over there can be translated here. It seems to work quite nicely. Okay. So the how does this motivate what I this presentation I want to talk about is that certain rings you can construct out of either the quantization or the space itself will tell you stuff about the cohomology of spaces on the right hand side, and that's how this presentation comes about. And so these are sort of two conjectures. The first one is due to Hikita. And it says that this is without using quantizations. It says that the torus fixed point subscheme, so we have a torus action, a C star action on MC. We could take the fixed point subscheme here. That's isomorphic to, conjecturally, cohomology of this Higgs branch with the tilde. Maybe if the choice of GIT parameters is nice enough. And the second is, I don't know if I should officially call this his conjecture, but I believe Nakajima expressed this idea to Joel Kanitzer, and I've learned a bit from him, which is that, so here we want to replace this with some sort of quantum version. And one thing you can do is this thing people have been calling the B algebra. So, which I'll explain what it is you take the B algebra of this quantization. That's some sort of analog of fixed-point subscheme, the ring of, and that should be isomorphic now to the, so here there was a choice of quantization I sort of suppressed. Here there's a choice of C star, and so on this side, you should get the C star equivariant cohomology now of this MH. And that's the idea. So, sorry, which one? Yeah, I think it does. This one on this side.
Yeah, the one on the bottom line.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I believe that's true.
Sorry, what was this B notation?
Oh, yeah, sorry. yeah, I should define that. So here, if we had a, if you have a graded algebra, I mean, Z graded, Z graded. Then B of A is defined to be sort of A0 mod anything which is in A0 which could be constructed using non-zero degrees. But with a choice of order here, so. So sort of anything which is positive and you multiply with a corresponding negative thing, those will end up in A0, you kill all that stuff. And so if actually you can check that if you plug in a commutative algebra with a C star action, I mean a grading, same as the C star action, you'll get the functions on the torus fixed point subscheme. So actually here we could have said B of functions on the Coulomb branch. So really just to reiterate, this is really a generalization of that. Again, if you're working with something not commutative, this choice of ordering here that the positive stuff is to the right is sort of critical.
So in the case of AH, I mean, I just, in my head, I always think of AH as like a huge thing because you're adding all these formal power series, but somehow maybe because of the C star action and because of what you're modding out by, it's not, I mean, if the conjecture is true, it looks like this thing is not so much bigger somehow than.
Yeah, that's right. And you should think that here, there's still, so this B, this grading is actually not from the H itself. H is sort of degree zero.
Right.
You have two C star actions really to play with. And the H is becoming the equivariant parameter on this side.
I see.
That's what should happen.
I see. So they're both rings over.
They're both over.
Series H.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or maybe just be lazy polynomials or something.
Okay.
But
with appropriate C star.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
I see.
That's right.
Okay.
And sort of another motivation, at least mathematically speaking, is that this B algebra thing sort of controls highest weights. So the point is that, you could look at a modules for A where sort of any vector gets killed by large degree stuff. So just a remark. Controls the highest weight theory. In the sense that, for example, if A happened to be like a universal enveloping algebra, and you could choose, we're supposed to grade it. So you could grade it by the action of something like sort of bracketing with row check. So choose some sort of element of the Cartan and just grade it with respect to its eigenvalues. Then you'll produce something which actually controls highest weights for this algebra. Actually, what exactly do you get? I think in this case, if you choose a regular element to sort of take its eigenvalues with, I think you just get something isomorphic to something like that. If I remember right, this is some sort of just PBW theorem fact. So that's basically all that's happening. But in general, you might get something more interesting. And the idea is if you start with this one of these quantizations and this choice of Hamiltonian C star action. So one other thing I sort of suppress is that this action should lift to an action there. And that's this grading here, which is going to be the B algebra that you're looking at.
Question for you. It seems like the first conjecture would be that eta is
it should be a thing above some other back element. Two different things have the back element here.
Yeah, so well, sorry if I don't motivate these conjectures very well, but I don't know the physical content of of this. So again, to think of this highest weight stuff, to me the interesting thing is you're looking at some algebra, for example, I mean, this is maybe a bad example, but that you could say that its highest weights are governed by this algebra. Right?
I mean, I know what B of A is, that you turn on some masses,
but so the goal will be then is to sort of apply, try to understand this for quiver gauge theory.
It could be non-commutative.
Yes, yeah, that's right. So there's a couple things to check here. And I was thinking about that on the way here. Is it obvious that that thing's always commutative? I forget whether it is. This thing is always well defined. This will always be an ideal in there, of course. I'm not sure off the top of my head. So certainly in the cases, this Quiver Gates theory case, it will be commutative.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, maybe you want something like that to make this worthwhile studying. Yeah, I think if the fixed points aren't isolated, it's not quite clear what this ring looks like. But if they're isolated, this should be some sort of finite dimensional algebra over this ring, finitely generated. Finitely generated module. Yeah, over this probably. So, yeah, what it should look like. Yeah. So try to understand this for Quiver Gates theories. I'll say of type, say ADE. So some simply laced Dinkin diagram. Okay, so I thought I'd just fix some notation and set up what these things are. So I mean, both of these signs are sort of very concrete in this case. And let me just make sure I don't mix up my notation. So. So I want G to be a simple Lie group, simple algebraic group over the complex numbers, type ADE, simply laced. And we need to fix some data to so the data that we need is two co-weights for this this group. So lambda is going to be a dominant co-weight. And I want to explicitly write out there's some fundamental co-weights for this guy. And I'm going to write it as a combination of them. So it's a dominant co-weight. And the other data is another co-weight, which is not necessarily dominant co-weight. But a weight which could be a co-weight which could be a weight in the representation corresponding to this. So I want that lambda minus mu is the sum of co-roots where these mi's are positive or non-negative. Sorry. So in other words, it's something like if I take a co-weight, then a co-weight is just a weight for the Langlands dual group. And I can form the irreducible representation of sort of G Langlands dual. And here, this requirement is basically you should think that sort of mu is a weight space in here. Okay. In this case, this sort of Quiver Gates theory, I'm supposed to tell you what G is and what N is. And here, G is going to be a product of general linear groups corresponding to these differences that were here, these M's. And N is a sort of Nakajima type thing. Where, oh, I guess, sorry, I'm supposed to choose also an orientation. Of the Dinkin diagram. So I'll write the nodes in the Dinkin diagram as say little I goes to little j, something like that. So here I have a sum over all arrows in the Dinkin diagram of the same type of HOM. C to the MI, C to the MJ, plus, again, I'll draw a picture in a second. Maybe it'll clarify. Some MI into lambda I. So it's this picture where, I got to get the convention right. You have some sort of picture like this. I think those ones are usually the circle ones. We have something like this. And again, we've chosen some orientation of all of these arrows. So this would be type A. And you've added sort of these extra nodes, the framing vertices, with arrows going up, which look like this, but just going like that. Something like this. So that's what this data is. And we can do this sort of construction over there, is the point. And if you do this, on the one hand, if you do this Higgs branch, you get the Nakajima quiver variety. And if you do it, the Coulomb branch, conjecturally, you get something related to the Affine-Grassmannian. So, or maybe I should delete the word conjecturally now. I don't know. If it is the, I think they may prove this in their forthcoming paper, so it's not entirely clear to me. But so I'll put a sort of asterisk there. Sorry?
Who?
Braverman, Finkelberg, Nakajima.
Oh.
So yeah, so there's this construction that Nakajima, or at least that's the version I'm familiar with, of what this space might be. And I believe that in the forthcoming paper they're showing that that thing actually agrees with the slice. So yeah. I lost track of where I was. So I think what I want to say is that, yes, in this case, the I put theorem, but then question mark. I don't know if it's a theorem. Maybe it's a conjecture.
You put quasi-theorem.
Quasi-theorem, yeah, OK. There we go. Quasi-theorem. Well, this part is certainly fine. Again, it's the supposed to be the zero level of the moment map, like that, Hamiltonian reduction. But I want to do this version here, so that's just an Nakajima quiver variety. And I'll use a non-standard convention for this, M lambda mu. But I mean the one associated to that sort of data. And the part that's conjectural is that this Coulomb branch is a slice to a Schubert variety. Or generalized slice in the Affine-Grassmannian for G. I say generalized because there's some condition about these data lambda and mu that I gave. If mu is dominant, then you can remove this word. But in general, for other mu, you might not really be a slice in the Affine-Grassmannian at all. So as I said, sort of quasi-theorem, possibly being proven soon. I don't know. Maybe forthcoming.
Did you think that the object can be generalizing the amount of direction with elliptic homology?
I don't know. I don't really know much about elliptical. Great. So so how am I going to get this presentation? Just to recap, what I was studying with Joel and Peter and Oded was a sort of explicit conjectural description of a quantization for this AH from before. And so the idea is, well, if you sort of feed this into this Nakajima conjecture or Hikita conjecture, you should spit out a explicit presentation for what the cohomology is of the quiver variety. And so, I mean, I'll overview a little bit about the slices, but I thought rather than going over the sort of generators and relations from the slice point of view and Yangians and stuff, what I really want to talk about is a sort of how you might guess that presentation from looking at the quiver variety itself. So you can actually sort of get a nice geometric argument for why this should be the case. So that's what I'm going to talk about. But first of all, I thought I would just say a little bit about what these slices are. So this is related to the affine Grassmannian. Sorry, I'll give this some notation so that we've been denoting this Gur lambda mu. That's what this slice is. So these guys are somehow dual. So the affine Grassmannian for G is, at least on the level of C points, sort of Laurent series in T valued points of the group mod power series points. And it's really an in-scheme, so it's some sort of functor. But on the level of points, you could pretend that you're just looking at GLN or SLN. SLN is probably better. So I mean, these are somehow just matrices with Laurent series entries and determinant one, and same thing with that. So it's somehow a little bit concrete. So the Schubert varieties and the Schubert cell are orbits for this group on Gur. I'll drop the C here just since it slightly simplifies the notation, but I mean the same thing here. So. This is the Gur upper lambda part. So this is the orbit of this group acting on some point. So if you're familiar with flag varieties, there's Schubert cells and Schubert varieties there. And normally you take orbits of the Borel acting on a vowel group element, or the class of a vowel group element. And that's just the same thing here, but in the sort of affine Grassmannian loop setting. I think there's a lambda here. I think. With the same data as before, sorry. I mean, lambda there suggestively is the same lambda. The orbits here are labeled by co-weights for the group. Sorry? Yeah, it's a little confusing. But if you think about, for example, SLN, you're always getting sort of a positive power here and a negative power here. So you do somehow end up with negative powers, even despite the fact that K might be positive.
Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, lambda is also negative entry.
Yes, yes. That's the thing. Right. Great. And these satisfy, again, if you're familiar with Schubert varieties and cells, that if you take their closure, there's a nice closure relation. There's a sort of stratification of the overall space. And here, it's exactly, I sort of didn't write it that way. Another way of saying what I wrote down there is just that lambda is greater or equal to mu. I mean, the difference between the two is the sum of positive co-roots with co-roots with positive coefficients. So here you should take a sum over lambda, which are sorry, over mu, which are less or equal lambda, which happen to be dominant, and you take all the sort of smaller stuff. So you get some smaller strata when you take the closure. OK, and so what we want to construct in the end is a slice to a Schubert variety inside Gur. The way it works is you're going to take this larger Schubert variety. It contains the smaller Schubert cells. And we're going to take a slice to one of these inside here. So I'm going to copy Joel's diagram from his talk here. But if you look at the video archive, you'll see that he did the exact same drawing. Which is that sort of somehow there's some larger thing, which is this Gur lambda bar. And inside, you've got a smaller piece, Gur mu. And I guess to be transverse, this actually go like this or something. So it's some sort of slice to it. Yeah. So I guess I need one more thing. Sorry. Lots of setup. There's one other thing to do is sort of to get the slice, we're going to take an opposite orbit. So we don't define Gur lower mu to be an orbit for another group. So I call it G1 T inverse. That just means it's the kernel of the evaluation map from here. I took G with polynomial entries in T inverse. And there's a map which sends t to infinity, so it just kills the variable. That maps into G. You take the kernel. A better way of saying it is it's sort of if you wrote this out in expansion in t inverse, the constant term should be the identity. So we want an orbit for that group. The reason we want an orbit for that group is that it's if you take an orbit for this group and an orbit for that group at the same point, the tangent spaces are always complementary because these are all the power series, positive power stuff. That's all the negative powers, starting at t inverse. So, okay. So anyway, this definition, the space Gur lambda mu is Gur lambda bar intersect Gur lower mu. And conjecturally or quasi-theoremically, that's the Coulomb branch for this Clifford gauge theory. As I said, that only works if lambda is greater than mu and both dominant. If you want to do it with mu not dominant, you have to maybe write something else down. I'm not going to. Okay, and as I said, I don't want to write explicitly anything involving Yangians, but I thought I would very quickly motivate how Yangians appear in this picture. So the idea is that, I think this, let's go here. So you have the following diagram. There's this group, and of course, this Gur lower mu defined there is an orbit for the group, so there's a map, which is just the action. And sitting in here, this is defined as an intersection, so in here is this Gur lambda mu. And it's a closed subvariety. So actually, all these things are affine, and on the level of functions, you get functions on D1T inverse, contains functions on Gur mu. And this is a closed subvariety of this, so it's defined by some ideal of functions which vanish. And you get a surjection onto functions on here. So to quantize, what we showed, me together with Joel and Ben and Odette, was that the Yangian YG, the Yangian for G, which I don't want to define. So it plays the role of this ring here. So there's some, it fits into this picture like that. Then there's some smaller thing. So here there was a containment. There's something we call Y lower mu, and it surjects onto some algebra Y mu lambda. And as you may guess from the suggestive layout, these are supposed to be quantizations of these three things. And the reason I should have put conjectural into a conjectural presentation in the title was that what we could show is actually that Y quantizes essentially this ring. You're supposed to put power series, actually. Y mu quantizes the functions on this slice. So this ring has a Poisson structure, and this deforms it, in other words. But that this one may or may not quantize this. It's sort of, this could have no potent elements is the issue that's going on. Anyway. It's hard to work with these because it's quite they're all explicit generators and relations stuff. So that's what makes it a little tricky. But again, still with this Nakajima or Hikita conjecture in mind, we want to compute the B algebra of this. That's the idea. As I said, so I don't want to write it down in the Yangian language. I thought I would tell you what it looks like, and again, tell you how you might guess that from looking at the Clifford variety. Okay, so I guess this is. This is sort of a theorem. So what does the B algebra of Y lambda mu look like? So it looks like a quotient of an infinite polynomial ring. So I have generators A, I, S. So I is just a node of the Dynkin diagram. But S is sort of, it's supposed to capture all these powers of T. So there's infinitely many powers. You have S. You can flip the convention to match that if you want. And it's going to be a quotient of this by a very big ideal of stuff. So let me start writing it and then say what I mean. So there's some condition here. So I'm supposed to tell you some elements of this ring to quotient by. And the idea is that what they're actually labeled by, I'll just write it here. For gamma, that's maybe a sort of strange thing to write. What I'm supposed to do is look at a fundamental weight for the group, or for the Lie algebra, take its viral orbit, and just pick those elements. So there's going to be a generator for each one of those, for each I. And the idea is that this ideal is, I guess let's extend, this is just a continuation of that line. These R's are sort of, for R big enough, some number, which I'll leave blank for now. So somehow you have this very big polynomial ring. We're just killing large enough powers of the variables, is more or less what it says. Again, I haven't written these down explicitly, so I'll hopefully demystify that in a second. But it's supposed to be, what you'll actually end up with is some a finite dimensional, not finite dimensional. Yes, you'll end up with a finite dimensional algebra. Sorry, I forgot one variable. There's supposed to be an H in here. It's a ring over C of H, and which again is supposed to be this equivariant parameter. Okay. So somehow this is kind of natural from the Yangian point of view. You should think that these AI things, they're elements which live in the Yangian or this one. They're sort of like the Cartan, something like this. So from that point of view, that's where you see this. But again, rather than write them all down, since the definition is kind of complicated, I thought I would say how you might get these from the quiver variety point of view. And the idea is just the following. So suppose, this is sort of an aside. Suppose we had a sort of manifold or variety, and we had a group acting on it. Maybe I'll call the group H or something. Group acting on X, and we want to describe the equivariant cohomology. Maybe H is bad. Oh well. We want this. And the idea is that somehow to get a presentation for something like this, one way to go about it would be to find a lot of, some equivariant vector bundles on this whose ranks you know. So idea, find a collection of vector bundles, H equivariant vector bundles on X. So let me give this some sort of name. V, I'm running out of index, alpha. Alpha is in some range. And suppose we know their ranks. So that rank V alpha is, I'll suggest that we call it M alpha. Actually, let's just do this better. This is what I want to put in the end. So if I have a bunch of vector bundles, they're all equivariant, we know their ranks, we can compute the equivariant churn classes. And if you know the rank of a bundle, then of course the churn classes are going to vanish beyond the rank. Right? So the you could form sort of churn classes, sort of C, K, sorry, what letter did I use there? R. C R of V gamma are 0 for R greater than M gamma. And so somehow if you the hope would be to sort of, this is the sort of ideal you want to pick. It's sort of a surjection from some infinite ring of indeterminates, somehow express, so these are going to be turn classes like this, that we want to express in these A's, and that will be the presentation. So now you have a series of vector bundles, you can compute their turn classes, you can compute their ranks, and this vanishing condition, this ideal is just saying what the ranks are. Okay, so that's how it comes about, I think. And I can tell you explicitly what they are. So. Any questions so far? Did I lose anyone? I hope not. So again, to really make the connection hopefully clear with the quiver variety, again, we had this picture before of the this quiver with the extra nodes and so on. So let me give those, I'm going to draw in the usual math way without the circles and boxes. So
it's less clear.
I agree. Yeah, it is nice with the boxes, actually. I agree. The only nice thing here is just it distinguishes which bundles I'm talking about. But so here I've got a vector space I'll call V1. I'll use the traditional math Nakajima notation, so Vn. Sorry, there should be a framing vertex everywhere. I'm just drawing the type A1, of course, but Wn, W3, W2, W1. This is really supposed to be from before this C to the M1, and so on. Just relabel the data. These are the vector spaces at these points, and the quiver variety is really some thing with some maps that we've done. Right. Maybe I should do an example to illustrate in a second. So the idea is that on the quiver variety, each of the vector spaces that are part of the defining data gives you what they call a topological bundle on the space. So each VI and WI gives a tautological bundle. How am I doing for? Right. So here, what did it look like? The quiver variety, if that's down here, M lambda mu, bad notation. It's a quotient of something by, so it's theta here, and then there's this group. And the associated vector bundles here are induced vector bundles under this. Yeah, okay, and you just, for the VIs, you act, as you said, sort of naturally. The WIs, you just let G act trivially. So just trivial vector bundles, yeah, sorry. So. trivial for G. Just trivial vector bundle, yeah. Sorry. The reason they can be interesting from the point of the equivariant cohomology is. Sorry? Yes, yeah, that's right. So you have this other group action, which is up here, sort of flavor symmetry, I guess, so. Which I've sort of suppressed from my notation. But yes, they're interesting for that and for the C star action, which scales some stuff. Right. Each VI, okay. And I'll just denote them VI, WI. Okay. I was debating the best way to define how this works, but. I think just WI. Sorry, yeah, I know I haven't, without defining it all precisely. I mean just the WI, so. There's one trivial for C lambda, and I don't think I need a star. Okay. Yeah. So let me do an example. So this is when the G is like SL2. Sorry, I used lots of different Gs. script DG in this case is a single copy of GLM. So I guess you could say it's a gauge theory for UM or something, right? For the compact one anyway. And the quiver in this case is, so I also suppressed all the doubled arrows here. There's something like this. So you get this kind of picture. So this mu inverse of zero. Also, sorry, lambda here is just a number. And mu is also a number. And they're twice some other number. So they're just the dimensions of these spaces. Mu inverse of zero, the quiver variety data is a pair of two maps, one going this way called epsilon, or I'll denote epsilon, one going down, denoted eta. And mu inverse of zero is just a set of all pairs, eta epsilon, such that eta epsilon equals zero. So this is a moment lap level zero condition. Is that equation there? Okay. So, right, and the map down to here, it says that this is a GLM principal bundle. Sorry, I should put some word like semi-stable here. Anyway, epsilon injective. Sorry. Okay, and the idea is that there are sort of two tautological bundles here. They're both induced bundles. Again, this one is trivial, this one is not. And so the idea is that the rank of this one has rank m. So the fibers of this vector bundle v are these cm's. The fibers of this vector bundle are these c lambdas. This one has rank lambda. And this semi-stable condition that I sort of forgot initially, that epsilon is injective, lets you define a map from V, it's more or less epsilon, this kind of crappy notation. There's an injective map of vector bundles from this one into that one. And you can also look then at the quotient bundle. So like this. And we also know what its rank is because the rank here was lambda. So of course the rank here is lambda minus m. And the presentation you would get for this cohomology ring, I claim, so we can actually do a sort of souped up version, which is a GL lambda across C star equivariant cohomology of here. So this is my H. Those are happen to be equivariant. There's some minor shifting. And here I'd get something like, I should not do this. Let's just do it like that. So there's only one node. I'll suppress the I from the notation A. Yeah, S is greater than 1. And then I do what I said before, which is, so I want to somehow relate. Somehow these are supposed to represent churn classes of bundles here. So these A's really, is supposed to be the S churn class of V. And as we know, the rank here is M. So the sort of thing I want to impose is like sort of A, R is going to be 0 for R bigger than M. Those churn classes vanish when they're big. And we just need to compute sort of how this sort of guy looks. And I guess I didn't set up my notation very well for that. But for example, depending on how you want to, what the C star action actually is, you're going to add something like some coefficients of something involving 1 over A. So the Chern class of this would be a quotient of the, sorry, the Chern character of this bundle is a quotient of the Chern character of this one and that one. Okay. So how would you actually feel about computing it here? What I mean is, you want to look at something like this A of U. I want to look at is something like the Chern character in this variable of V over epsilon, like this, where I'm using too much notation, sorry. What I mean here is 1 minus 1 plus minus 1 over U, first Chern class of this thing. The sum of all Chern classes, like that. When you put all these Chern classes together in a series like this, then if you want to compute the Chern class of a quotient, it's division of one character by another. That's what I mean to say. And here, I'm just sort of, by A of U, I mean something like that. Maybe I got the signs wrong. Something like this. And I want to take certain coefficients of this, U to the negative R, T. And T should be bigger than the rank of that one now. Yes, yes. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. I'm not sure who it would be attributed to. Yeah, sorry, the point. I'm losing track of my point here, I think. What's this space? This is something like, sorry? Yes, yeah. It's T star of a Gur. So this was injective. So every map gives you an injective, an m-dimensional subspace. So this is Gur M lambda. And yes, I think if you look up, you can confirm that this sort of presentation here, had I written it sufficiently clearly, would agree with a kind of classical presentation for it. Right. So, I should have really written everything clearly, and I did not. But there's this extra. There's some C star action that you can sort of fool around with, right? And actually, depends which one you want, but you can sort of rescale this one or this one, more or less, corresponding to either rescaling the fibers of the T star, or sort of rescaling the Gur part and the T star part at the same time. Right, yeah, sorry, I guess you're right. So certainly, if you remove the C star, they're the same, right? Because, of course, this is a vector, it's a fiber bundle, so it's a vector bundle over the base. But I think I'm screwing up some extra equivariant parameter here. That too, yeah. So we could make everything, actually, as I said, GL lambda cross C star equivariant, and to do that, I would need to add some extra notation. I just, I guess, like, on the fly, did I say nothing?
W has a Chern character, which is actually out of U minus MI, not minus the equivalent parameter.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, if you want to write them, yeah. So I can give you, sorry, I should give a full, I'll just give the full notation that I would use normally. So this thing is supposed to represent the Chern classes of the W's. So this R thing is some sort of Chern character for W. And depending on which C star action you use, this map may not be C star equivariant, and you might need to put some sort of shift in. So there's some sort of, you need to twist by like a trivial bundle with C star weight 1. And then when you do the Chern character, you should get a shift. So you get something funny like that. But you can take it all into account and still get more or less the classical presentation. Okay. I hope that was slightly more motivated. So again, the overall idea is this, what I discussed over there. And the claim is, which I feel like I'll stop because I don't think I'm going to explain it very well. The claim is that you can do this in general. And you can produce a ring where instead of just having these two sort of types of generators, I should note that, sorry, this A, in that notation there, I want to think of A as corresponding to, so I'm supposed to label these by vowel group orbit, elements of the vowel group orbit of a fundamental. So here, of course, it's SL2, so there's only one fundamental. And then the vowel group orbit, there's also this guy, which should correspond to this this thing. So let's do it this way. V, and I had W mod V. And there's those two. OK, I guess I'll stop. Thank you for listening. Yeah?
Does quantum cohomology ever appear?
I would like for it to appear, but not at the moment.
This what? Quantum cohomology.
Actually, sorry, there's one thing I should have mentioned, which is an interesting mathematical, another interesting mathematical side of this stuff, which is somehow, I mean, this is already known from the quiver variety business, that if you take these quiver varieties and sort of sum over mu, that carries a Yangian action. So I'll do this over here. If you take something like sum over all mu, something like GL lambda cross C star, too much notation, lambda mu, there's actually an action of the Yangian on it. And the thing that's sort of mysterious to me anyway is that from the point of view of this work, the Yangian is really appearing for this cohomology in each piece. But somehow when you put them all together, there's actually another Yangian acting. And I don't know how to motivate it. But so somehow in these explicitly presented rings like this, there should be a way to write down a Yangian action which sort of for which these are the different weight spaces. And I don't know how that would go. But it's kind of strange. So it looks a lot like the FKS isomorphism. It's the FKS is like it looks like a vertex operator action of the Yangian on some sort of Fox base. That's what it sort of looks like. Frenkel, Katz, and Siegel. There's this classical action of the affine Lie algebra on the basic representation for affine Lie algebra. So if people are familiar with this story. And there's this statement that this representation is isomorphic to some sort of Fox space tensor with the weight lattice or root lattice. Anyway, lots of notation, but you can sort of express that these pieces here in this language, this pi should be this algebra here without the quotient. And there should be some way to let the Yangian act on something similar, where it sort of pushes this piece, which is in degree mu, to another piece. So you can sort of make sense of what it looks like. It looks like vertex operators.
So your conjecture is if you take sum over all b, y, lambda, mu, over all mu,
yes.
It should carry an action of m.
Yes. And it should be
if
actually.
If the previous conjecture is true, then it's obvious.
If the previous, yes.
Then it's that statement plus the fact that we just computed a cohomology.
Oh, sorry. And if you believe Nakajima's conjecture also. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah, yeah. If Nakajima's conjecture is true, then it's there. Yes, there by definition would be one. Yeah. Maybe by definition is wrong, but by Nakajima's work, there would be one. Yeah.
Thanks.